So I think Jim Paul described very well. I mean, the international partnership working with all of these countries, not just Russia, but with all the countries of Europe and Japan and Canada and everything is just a fantastic experience. But I'll relate one story that drove this home for me because I grew up in the Air Force, you know, during the Cold War, and we were sworn enemies of this. And one of the things that we did in our squadrons, we were all dual based over in Germany or somewhere like that, and we would, in preparation for the war that was coming, the World War III that we were all training for, we always had our first couple of missions completely planned. Like if we went into combat, our first couple of missions, we'd already planned them and briefed them. And we were ready to go launch on those first missions. And we had targets for our first missions. And it was every pilot had those. We had to recertify on those every year, so they were ready to go. So fast forward, I'm training for my first flight on a shuttle. And you know, the Cold War's over. We're just starting this Shuttle Mir program that Paul just talked about. And on my flight, we have a Ukrainian astronaut is going to fly. Be the first Ukrainian astronaut to fly on a U.S. anything. And his name's Leonid Kadenyuk, but he was in the Soviet Union. He was a Soviet fighter pilot, a Soviet test pilot, and a Soviet cosmonaut. But now he's part of the Ukraine, and he's going to go fly with us. And so about a month before launch, we were down at the Cape, and we're doing what's called a crew equipment interface test, or maybe it's TCD, might have been the count, the dry count we did.
TCD.
Just some kind of training, yeah. But we were in crew quarters, and we were talking late one night. It was myself, my commander, who was also an Air Force F-111 pilot, and Leonid. And we got to talking, and we were looking at this map, and Leonid was talking about, you know, he'd been flying MiG-21s and Su-27s. He also flew MiG-29s, and he's showing us where he was stationed, you know, like when he was doing, and they essentially did the same thing, right? They had their missions planned out too. And he was talking about where he was stationed, and he pointed at the map, and Kevin stopped him and said, "Hey, Leonid, your base when you were there was my target." And the three of us just kind of stopped and looked at each other and thought, "Wow, if you'd have told me 10 years ago we would be flying together and be friends and working together in space, I would have never believed it." But it was just one of those moments where it kind of gave you chills that the world has changed completely, and you're my friend, but you used to be my enemy.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me, Steve. My crewmate Yuri Usachev, who I was on space station with, trained with for 4 years, lived on station with him for about 6 months. He's my space brother. I love him. He's a wonderful person.
He is a great guy.
Yuri and I, when we were getting to know each other, talked about his military service. He was a 2-year conscript. He was in the chemical corps in the Soviet Army and assigned to Germany. Well, I also was in the U.S. Army and assigned to Germany. And we found out that we served in Germany together at the same time. He was in East Germany, and I was in West Germany. And he swears to this day that he was in the Chemical Defense Corps. But I'm not sure about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I doubt
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right.
But you think about things like that, and you think about how different the world could
right.
be and how much better it is when you're cooperating rather than at odds with other people.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to ask about pranks. So let's talk about pranks you may have pulled on others. Steve, you look guilty, so I'm going to ask you first.
All right. Well, so since Jim happens to be sitting right here, and one of the things, I don't know if we related, but Jim and I actually flew a mission together. So Jim was on Expedition 2, one of the very, only the second increment of astronauts to ever go on the International Space Station.
Steve, be careful.
It's okay, because it might be okay. You might be angry at the end of this. But
I'll keep you two apart.
Yeah, just to be clear, He pulled this on me, not the other way around. Okay. So anyway, so I was commanding early shuttle mission, early assembly mission, and they were up on expedition too. So we go up there and we dock, and we're basically our mission together that we're doing is we're installing the airlock on space station, which allows you to do spacewalks, and then we're going to perform the first spacewalk out of that new airlock. And so we're up there. And we carried a lot of stuff. We carried the airlock and the oxygen and nitrogen tanks went with it, a bunch of equipment to outfit it, a bunch of other logistics for space station. But one other thing we carried is we had the shuttle has a toilet, right? Toilets are really important in space. But we were testing a toilet that was designed for the ISS. And it was a toilet that had been developed. And by the way, I'm not going to go into the details of this, but let me tell you, this is the Cadillac of toilets. It was an awesome one. Compared to the shuttle toilet, it was a great one. So we were testing this toilet, and essentially they replaced the toilet we normally carried with this extended duration orbiter toilet that was destined for the ISS. So one morning, we got up, getting ready to go to work. We're just down on the mid-deck, which is the lower deck, and we're getting our breakfast ready and eating and getting ready to get to work. So Jim comes, do you remember this story now?
Not yet.
Okay. So Jim.
I'm getting nervous, though.
So Jim comes floating over from the ISS, comes into the mid-deck, say, hey, guys, what's happening? And he said, hey, Steve, Mission Control, I don't know if you did this, but Mission Control called me and said, they really want me to come over and test your space station long-duration toilet. So I said, great, Jim, that's fine. You remember it yet?
Yeah.
Good. All right. So I said, sure, Jim, no problem. So I go over there, we go in there, and I show him how the thing works, because it works different than the other one. And then we have a little privacy curtain. So, you know, it's private. So he goes in there. We're eating our breakfast, you know, going along. And then in a few minutes, all of a sudden I hear this, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, out of Jim's voice from that toilet. And how many of you have seen the movie Caddyshack? Okay. How many of you remember the baby Ruth scene in the pool from Caddyshack? So he says this, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, and then this... this thing that looks like a baby Ruth, but not really, comes floating from underneath that curtain toward us. And we're at zero G. I'm just floating there. So I'm backpedaling, but I can't really move. And the rest of the crew is scrambling, trying to get away from this thing, just like in the movie. That was just our natural reaction. You know, it's the old fight or flight. Clearly for us, it was flight. And then I turned toward the back of the mid-deck, and Janet Cavandi, who is my flight engineer, who's on our crew, is sitting in the corner with a camcorder, and she's filming the whole thing, and she's laughing so hard that this camera's going up and down. And as it turns out, Janet, to get us back, had flown this, like, vegetarian piece of bread that looked just like that, and she had hatched a scheme with Jim to come over and get us. And that was a classic prank. So I applaud you for that.
I give that one a good rating.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I was just a prop for Janet. It was really her. Now, yeah. Why is it that all the practical jokes and pranks have something to do with the toilet?
I don't know.
Because I had seen something like that before on an earlier flight where we had flown a freezer. And it was going to go up and bring back some samples that we were going to produce on orbit. When we flew it up, it was going to fly up empty, and someone had the really good idea of flying up some ice cream in it, because we don't really have astronaut ice cream. And they sent up little dove things that were chocolate-coated little cylinders that looked a lot like that Baby Ruth thing.
Yeah.
And someone played that same prank on me, and I can't remember which crew member it was. It was probably Tom Hendricks, but probably did the same thing with floating these little things out from under the toilet screen there and screaming and everyone panicking and not wanting to get near it and say, you made that mess, you clean it up.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
So I wasn't creative.
It's not an original joke. I'm less impressed
now. I'm sure that
now.
Janet prompted it.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I'm positive.
Mm. Well, I'll tell a story that I was going to put in my book, but it was a little too hard to write. So I'll share it with y'all because you're EAA people, right? And one of the things that the Mission Control traditionally did ever since Gemini was to wake crews up with some music. And in the early days, the astronauts would just annoy each other with the worst piece of music they could ever find, just to annoy their brothers up in space. And so it became traditional for the astronaut Capcom on the planning shift to pick some music and play it up. Well, after a while, I think Capcom's just kind of got tired of trying to pick music. I did a lot with Mario Runco. He had a recording studio at home, and he would cut and paste and do all this stuff. But eventually, it kind of got to be, well, okay, what music does the astronaut want to have played for them on a certain morning?
And from our perspective, you looked forward to your music.
Your music. Something
that came up, and you knew it was for you.
Right, because your families would pick a couple of the days.
Families would pick it. It was known whose music was played on what morning, because didn't somebody once say, you know, can you actually hear the music? And they said, yeah, it's like hearing Beethoven's Fifth on a toaster or something like that.
Basically.
The speakers was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Anyways, it was a flight, and we had the ultimate Aggie astronaut. Now, for those of you not from Texas, Texas A&M is the most important school in Texas, according to anybody who's ever been to Texas A&M, and they're known as Aggies. And this guy was absolutely the most proud guy of being an Aggie. So he had asked to have the Aggie War Hymn played for him for his wake-up music, and we knew what day it was. Unbeknownst to me, the commander of that mission had decided to play a little joke on his mission specialist.
I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that.
No.
It was told to me that it was the commander.
Yeah.
And the Capcom came in not with the Aggie War Hymn, but with the theme from the Mickey Mouse Show.